You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Oh, Vankas, before we get into this perfect episode with Scotty James, you know we got to thank our daddies of the pod. We got to thank Kayla, Robin, Jordan Texera, Jay Lingle, Javier Mera, Sheila Valeri, Chandler, Luana Galbano, Ali Santana, Carla, Juarlo, Kimberly, Quaylin, Alonso, My Face 69, Don Janad, Jimmy, Stefano Dominicanti, Kimmy, sponsored by Mommy of the Pod, Hollister 584, Liv Lott, Cat, Future Dog Tour Dion, Steph Grossi, JB Fresh, Laura, Emily Gillenwater, Cody Hull is my F1 daddy, Branch W, Keep Up the Science Hate, Hunter Scruggs, Salmonella Mozzarella, I'm a LeClaire fan and yes it hurts, Jay Kess, Sigma Alonso for President, George Russell is Evil Peter Parker from Spider-Man 3, Matt Edwards is Always Right, I Wish I Was Max and Danny's Love Child, Delaney Andrews, Henry Kasky, Miles Lewis Alexander, The Real Total Wolf, Maggie B, and our newest daddy, Kaylee Breyer. Thank you, daddies. If you want to become a daddy of the pod, go to patreon.com/TRFpod and be our better factor today. Now, on to Scotty motherfucking James.
What's up, Vanga?
Hello, Vanga!
How is everybody doing?
Dude, how are you doing? I'm doing good today, Matt. I'm
feeling really good.
I'm doing good, dude, because today on the pod, listen, you can talk to, listen, we've talked to some F1 drivers. It's like, it's fun, it's awesome, it's great. But then there's the whole world around Formula One, right? Yes. There's the whole culture around Formula One. And today we have literally like a spy.
9 million degrees, yes. Like 9 million bonds, like 1 degree of Kevin Bacon connections, yes, with everything Formula One.
Yeah. And listen, he is a very accomplished man in his own right. He's got, you know, gold medals. He's been in the Olympics. He's a very accomplished, you know, snowboarder. Look him up. That's all great. But more importantly, he's Lawrence Stroll's son-in-law, dude. Come on, we have Scotty James on the podcast.
I mean, we are in the U.S. So I was trying to pinpoint the accents there for a little bit. I liked it.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. We're bringing very L.A. energy. So
yeah. We're from New York. Yeah. It's, you know, we bring a loud, brash New York.
I love it.
Sports radio energy to this world, but. Yeah, we're so excited to have you on the pod.
So we're gonna get
a spy. I've never been called a spy before, but I'll take it.
You are. You're right in the thick of it. He's Edward Snowden, dude. Yeah. I mean, come on, dude. I mean, there's so many places to start. Listen, we're not here to fuck spiders, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Trying to appeal.
Yeah.
Let's not mess around.
Where should we start?
Well, we want to first start with how you met the love of your life.
Okay.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Yep.
Let's start there.
How did you meet the love of your life?
We went to a lovely lunch at...
Who introduced you?
We just were like, we get along. We'll see you at that location. Yeah. We have to talk. We just...
Australian mind meld.
So I was actually training at the Red Bull High Performance Center. He was driving for Red Bull at the time. And I was in town. And we actually had a mutual coach at the time.
I see.
And then he was there. I was there. And we connected. We got some lunch. And here we are. groomsmen are all adding.
Right. What was the moment? Because our producer Jenny wants to know, what was the moment where you're like, where you had that stepbrothers moment where you're like, are we best friends?
Did we just become best friends?
Yeah. What was that moment?
Probably the moment when we realized that we're both just as much idiots as each other, really.
Right.
So that was the big moment. And there was many occasions that we had that epiphany. Mm-hmm. So I would say it was a drip feed over time of having those moments. But we to be honest, like obviously being two Aussies from, you know, traveling around, being in sports that wasn't like very conventional, it's pretty outside the box, like a snowboarder, an F1 driver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We could relate on a lot of different topics, you know, just being away, traveling, family, the whole bit. And we kind of just hit it off and became good mates from there.
What year was this? When was this? When did this all begin?
I want to say 2016.
Okay.
Something like that. So it's been a minute.
I have to ask, like, I know you say you're both Australian, but I remember I was on my way to the Indy 500 and I was sitting next to an Australian guy who was like a big Indy 500 fan. And I was asking about F1 and he wasn't that into it. And I said, what about Danny Ricciardo? And he goes, he's from fucking Perth. Like, there was this like absolute disgust with Perth. Can you explain? Like, there, like, I've talked to people and like when Daniel Ricciardo comes up, there's a, like, people who don't follow F1, they're like, they'll look him up and they go, Perth. Like, can you explain?
So you're from Melbourne.
I'm Melbourne.
More of a normal person place.
Yeah, more. We have 10 fingers and 10 toes. I think there's like, it's funny because people from Sydney will give Melbourne people shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
And then honestly, and then Brisbane. So you have like Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. And then we don't really talk about Perth often.
Right. Yeah, it's like you're not even on our radar.
So they're very, very far out there, yeah. But beautiful place. It's a good little setup. But yeah, that's the best way to sum it up. We just create this like rivalry for no reason between states.
Okay. So there's no like, what's a stereotypical Perthian?
You'll notice you can pick out a Perthian when they say use.
Okay.
So they'll go, like, I'd say, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Or you'd say, how are you doing?
Right.
They'd say, oh, how are you going?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one. So it's Y-O-U-S.
Right.
Use is I've noticed a big Perthian.
Gotcha.
Speech.
Yeah. Speech, you know, I went to college in Pittsburgh and in Pittsburgh, they say yins. Like, what are yin's guys doing?
Yin's guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's called like yin. There's like, and at certain bars, there'll be like the yin-zarita, which is like a Corona stuck into a, you know, into a margarita. And it's called the yin-zarita. And I'm
yin-zarita.
Like, it really should be a,
what would be a yuzarita?
A yuzarita. Yeah. I don't know. What's, I mean, I feel like Australia's a big like drinking country,
like
right?
Like a BB and a Jägerbomb. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's not what you think it was. Cause like nobody drinks Fosters in Australia. Like,
yeah, there's that stigma that Australians drink Fosters, but it's actually very much like Carlton Draft, Vic Bitter, Melbourne Bitter.
Okay.
Some craft beers, but they're like your staples.
Right.
VB was a very prominent Australian.
So it starts in, you meet Daniel in 2016. Were you at all, was Formula One on your radar? Like, what was your impression of Formula One before you met Daniel?
I always liked it. My dad is actually a bit of a rev head. So when I was a kid, I'm surprised I didn't end up in like motocross. So my dad loved motocross. He raced 250 cc's like on track, and I always really liked it. So we always naturally I was always very much like in that motorsport, not specifically car racing.
Yeah.
And Daniel and I, in fairness, actually share that as in common. Like, we love motocross. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Obsess over it. So whenever we get time, we go and ride. But, yeah, so then started following F1. Yeah, I would say because DR and obviously Weber and like there was always that Australian presence a little bit. And then definitely more prominently once like we became close, probably because I just wanted to understand it a bit more.
Yeah.
So I'd say as of like first F1 I raced, so I went to, was in 2010. I was 15.
Okay.
I went with my dad and then
to Melbourne, I'm assuming.
To Melbourne.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, that was actually a moment where we did meet and we both had braces on. So it wasn't
you and and Ricardo.
He was dry.
Yeah, because we've seen
had braces.
Yeah, because them teeth were wild.
The glow up was real.
The glow up was real. Yeah. Them teeth really did a lot of
the smiles doing wonders these days.
Yeah.
And he was driving for Toro Rosso, and I have a funny photo. I was 15. He would have been, I guess late 18 or 19. And then that was just like in passing.
Right.
We were both there with like Red Bull or whatever.
Yeah.
And then however many years later we actually connected. But yeah, since then, I'm in the mix, even maybe a little more than I'd ever anticipated.
Yeah, well, because it's like, there's you meeting Danny, then are you kind of like palling around the F1 world? Like, because then this is now become, you are surrounded by it.
Yes.
So like,
so step two is Lance is step two.
Yeah.
So how did you meet Lance?
So funny story. First time I met Lance was at the Melbourne Grand Prix.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it was just before either race or quali. Can't quite remember. And I was taking a piss at the urinal. Taking a piss at the urinal. And I was obviously at that point had followed Formula One, so I knew who Lance was.
Right.
And he kind of like walked in from the garage and stood next to me at the same urinal and, taking a piss. And I kind of looked at I was like, oh, fuck, that's Lance. Like, I knew at the time, I think he was racing for, I can't remember, it was either Williams or maybe
Force India.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked at me and I was like, we looked at each other and he was like, oh, Scotty James.
And
I was like,
yes.
I was like, no way. I was like, oh, nice to meet you. And he's a big, Lance loves skiing and snowboarding.
Yeah. Right, yes.
He and I hit it off. We started talking about snowboarding and just connected.
And what percentage of your meet cute happened with your dicks out?
I would say I was probably 65% emptied the tank. He was obviously starting at 100. So there was an awkward, yeah.
Were you just like dick in hand empty, just not wanting to be rude?
Well, it was awkward because it was a cubicle where like you could see me if I was pissing or not. It was like a titanium silver wall where you could stand there and like you could tell if you weren't going or not.
It wasn't
a cubicle where
there's no dividers.
There's no divider.
Oh, okay.
So I had to pack it up.
Right.
Right, because if I make a really important contact, I'm going to pretend that I'm peeing forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a gallon of water. I'm doing 75 hard, whatever the fuck. I'll just pee all day.
So
you're just standing next to the urinal while he pees. Mm-hmm. That's almost more awkward than both dicks out.
That's true. It is.
Because you just have your hands by your side, to the urinal.
Whatever the case was. I'm now married to his sister.
Right. So it could have gone that bad. Yeah. Right.
No, but that was a funny story. And every year now at the Melbourne Grand Prix, we have a joke. We're like, should we go for our annual kiss?
Right.
So that's pretty funny.
So every time we see Lance, he seems like he's at his happiest place. Because when you see him in the paddock or in the garage, he seems serious. But when he seems so happy, like on Instagram or on Drive to Survive, when he's snowboarding, when he's doing, we got to ask a professional snowboarder, how is he on
the board?
Yeah.
You know, we actually haven't spent, I've actually never been snowboarding with him.
What?
No, never.
Interesting.
We got to get out. Every time he's usually out snowboarding is when I'm like in season.
Right.
So
it's
tough for me to go.
Like when he does it for fun, you're doing it professionally.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, that checks out.
But yeah, I mean, he gets pure joy out of it, as I do when I snowboard. So yeah, it's cool that we share that in common and we always talk about snowboarding a lot.
Does he ever ask you for advice?
He's rang me like randomly a couple times, like when he's been at a shop and he's like asking me which board to get or a pair of boots. But nothing where it's like, I'm about to do this. How should I go off this at which angle? Because I'd probably actually say, well, let's just not go there.
Yeah, let's just not do it at all. Well, it seems like he likes to do like the back mountain. He does like a lot of like backcountry stuff. Yeah. Does he have like a desire to kind of like,
transition?
Yeah.
He's like, how do you triple corkscrew? And you're like, no.
You're like, dude, you fell off a bike and broke both your wrists. I'm not telling you how to fucking do the half pipe.
No, I think, he likes the backcountry stuff. Yeah. So like more free riding, like big mountain.
Yeah.
Cause I'm obviously in the half pipe.
But in your free time, like if you're just like going to a mountain for pleasure, do you like the backcountry or do you like kind of more of the slopes?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. So in the case I could go and like do the kind of riding he does,
yeah,
have a great time.
Yeah.
Like it's, I think that's what I love about snowboarding. It's obviously my full-time job, but I'm able to also go and do it with friends and like share it with my family and stuff, which is pretty unique, I think, in the sense of sport.
Yeah. And what's a common misconception about him? Like what's something about Lance that people don't know that you'd like people to know about him?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Funny guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is. We get along really well. And I think the show, like specifically Drive to Survive, he's got a good sense of humor. He's, you know, he's happy-go-lucky when he needs to be, which is important as a sports person. But I think the show very much depicts him as like being serious, like 100% of the time.
Well, you saw the first episode of season 6, the stroll episode. You said that they missed some stuff. What do you think they missed
for
that you want to get into?
For me?
That you're willing to get into.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to be assassinated. In Someone's coming after me after this. Nah, probably that. Like, I just think that, you know, I guess what I, like him, but I mean, I get it for him because even for him, but all the drivers, like you got to protect yourself because nowadays there's nowhere to hide. Like people will rip you apart for anything. And like when you're competing at that high level and you're doing a sport that's super dangerous, like as much as you can be in the moment and present and like focus on the driving, I have a lot of empathy for them because I think sometimes, you know, shit happens and you kind of are told to react a certain way, which might not be the way that you want to.
Right.
So I think in the case of him, I'm like, and even some of the other drivers, like you might not always see the full character because it's not that they're not wanting to be their own person. It's almost like they protect themselves from what could happen in the case that people want to talk about it.
Right.
Like this. Like
yeah.
Right,
talk yeah. About. Sure. Right. Sure.
So. Yeah, but I wouldn't say they missed anything. I mean, you saw who's now my father-in-law. He's an intense guy. Like, he's intense. He wants to win, and he's no bullshit, and he'll, like, do anything to win.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that episode really portrayed that quite well, and I can resonate with him there. Like, I think it's – the end of the day, it's you can have a lot of friends within the industry, but at the end of the day, you all want to win.
Right.
And he's like very much on that winning side. So,
but you don't have to always be that intense. Like, I mean, like you can be a nice, affable guy and also be a psycho, right? At the same time.
Yeah. I think
he's got a pretty good 50-50 psycho and then can get along with most people.
Yeah. I think you and Daniel actually are like unique maybe in that way. Cause it's like you both, there are similarities. Like you both do these dangerous sports where you like you have to be like 100% focused when you're doing it, but then even like when I've watched, you know, like you like in the X Games and stuff, there you have like a, you can have like a bit of like a lightness to you as well.
Yeah,
but there's no, there's kind of the like,
it's not an either or.
Oh, like, but there's, but I feel like there's are a lot of you know competitors kind of are like just 100% one thing
Jordan
the whole time. But yeah. you and Daniel actually I feel like are two people that immediately come to mind who can have that kind of ease whilst doing something like that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's, for me, like, as just as a character, generally, like, as a sports person, he's kind of embodies, like, the most lovable kind of competitive character that you would... He's kind of like... DR would be someone that you look at and go, like, if I was a sports person, you'd want to kind of emulate, really,
yeah,
because he's able to switch between, you know, in that moment, headphones on, like I'm racing a car, you know, 300 Ks to then coming out of the car, having a relationship, you know, with people in either around the track or on the grid, or, you know, being able to we FaceTime and have a laugh and just like dick around.
The compartmentalization, even like when he's in the, cause like in this season of Drive to Survive, you get so many examples of drivers being like, you know, they're in the radios in their ears and like, shut the fuck up. Like, leave me alone, fuck off. And then there was one, you haven't gotten there yet, but there's one moment where someone says something to him when he's like freshly back And he goes, I'd be happy with radio silence. He's just so fucking polite. Like, that's the meanest he'll ever get on the radio. Yeah, it's like funny. Understood. Or like, I'd be happy with radio silence. That would thrill me. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun. Just like amazing how composed.
Some people, like even outside of F1, some people can, and I work on it, like some people can distinguish between being a savage competitor and like having those characteristics to be able to do that and then, you know, be able to switch it off like a light. And then some are just in it. Like,
right.
Full time. And I would say it's actually, I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. Like, I think if it works for you and you're successful, then I think that's the way you got to do it.
Right.
You know, people will get very scrutinized as well when they aren't what, you know, people think they should be. And then everything would be fucking boring because everyone's exactly the same. And like, I like that intensity. I respect that intensity a lot.
Correct me if I'm wrong, from like an outsider's perspective, the biggest commonality that I see between like snowboarding, what you do, and Formula One driving is that like, you have to it's like about a limit.
Mm.
Like, you know, you could do, you know, maybe three flips, but maybe not four. Like, what's the maximum you can push something without completely fucking destroying yourself?
Yeah.
And like, and there's we've talked about this with Charles Leclerc. It's like, you can tell that this guy wants it really bad, but it's like, can you want something too bad?
Yeah.
Where you overdrive the, like, especially when he's not given
yeah.
the right equipment, like you can see this guy overdrive the car.
Yeah. You take
like,
a corner too fast.
Because he's trying to make up for something.
Right. Right.
And it's like, how do you understand like, okay, this is what I'm capable of on a given day and like go right up to the line and, you know, this is the score I need, that sort of thing. Knowing what you're, especially because when there is no equipment, it's just you out there, knowing what you're capable of and knowing like getting 100 out of 100 out of yourself without ever overdriving the car that is Scotty James.
Yeah. So my car.
Yeah.
To be clear, I don't actually own one. So,
yeah.
No, but if my car was my snowboard and my life, I guess, or sport. Yeah. I would say it's sometimes that like just relentless approach to, you know, either wanting to win a championship or wanting to win a race or winning the X Games in my case.
Right.
It defines your character. So it consumes every part of you. So you eat it, you sleep, and that's you. And that is, I think that's the point where it becomes unhealthy because then for me personally, I always perform best when I'm able to, I mean, it's cliche, but you know, people say like when you're happy and you're completely 110% yourself, that's when you're going to live like a very full, happy life. And I truly believe that. Like for me, I've been able to find a very distinct difference between like when to have intensity and when not to, and then also when to let significant moments in my career define my next move or me as my character. Or because sometimes if you let every professional decision and every moment define you as a person, you're going to implode.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to, I mean, I can imagine even for these guys, like they're all want to win a championship. I would actually say, honestly, I think F1 is the most unfair sport in the world.
Yeah.
Hands down. Because it's all about resources, it's about money, it's about, you know, and there's probably decades and decades of these 1% talented drivers that will just never win a championship because they might not be in the right team or they might not, you know, for whatever reason end up being in that position to win a championship because every year there's always one team that's better than the other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're on that team.
Right.
You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like for me, I guess I'm happy because my results are on me. Mm. If I lose, it's on me.
Right.
If I win, it's on me.
Right.
Obviously, I have a great team around me and things like that, but I can take responsibility for every everything that's happened.
Right. You've never blamed the board once. You've never been like, it was the board.
Blamed it.
It's fucking board.
Error shit. We need the Red Bull Rare. Although I've got that, so we're good.
Well, speaking of, you know, the competitiveness and locking into that moment, I've heard that you and Daniel are pretty competitive with each other. Probably about
We got an inside scoop.
Little competitions here and there, you know. So we had a few questions about like who's, you know, of the two of you, like
smash him every day. Name anything.
All right. Who's faster on foot?
Me.
Okay. Who's stronger?
Me.
Who's got a stronger neck?
You're gonna think about that?
Which neck? Yeah. Are we talking a stem? Yeah, he's got a stem.
Okay, go ahead. Ping pong.
Never played.
Interesting.
Because these guys also too, they're very good at just like little things. Like they're like, yeah, because their reaction timing's great. So I would put it to him as a challenge for table tennis, but I reckon maybe he...
How are you at table tennis?
I'm actually not bad.
Okay.
Okay.
Have you ever played him in basketball?
We've shot hoops before.
Okay.
Not like one-on-one.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Because that would probably end in an injury.
I think I would just use my like weight as an advantage just on the defense, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Going nowhere.
Okay. Yeah. What about footy?
We've kicked the footy a bit. In a game or markers up. We call it markers up in Australia. So it would be like.
Okay. Now you've lost.
Yeah.
Us.
Yeah. We know footy, but we don't know. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, what's markers up? I'm curious.
What's markers up?
Markers up is like someone will kick the footy into a pack and you just got to mark it.
Okay.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, we'll who can catch it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, like, yeah, you mark it and you get, yeah.
Because there are these crazy, because I was watching these crazy things where, like, people, like, just commonly just leap on each other's backs.
Yeah, that's a specky.
That's a specky. That's like a spectacular mark.
Yeah, I'd actually specky Daniel pretty well. Yeah, he's perfect height.
Yeah.
That's the footy equivalent of, like, dunking on somebody.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like ultimate disrespect. Like
posterized.
Fuck you. Yeah. I catch like the ball.
Like, yeah. It doesn't get better.
Yeah.
What about, like, the dirt biking?
He's good. He's better.
Okay. Okay. Who's got the better smile?
Before or after braces? Yeah.
So let's go overall. Let's do before and after.
Lifetime.
Me for sure.
Yeah. Lifetime average is way higher. Okay. Then here's the question. Are you a better driver than he is a snowboarder?
Yes.
I've heard that, you know, you support him so much. You go to all of these events. Yeah. How many of your snowboarding events has he been to?
Donuts.
Donuts.
He hasn't been to one.
Hates the cold. Like hates it.
You think if you were in an event 20 minutes from his house, you think he'd go?
Probably not.
So he hates the cold, right? That's okay. And yet Enchanté.
Yeah.
There's a whole ski lodge.
Does that offend you?
A little bit.
Stolen Valor.
Stolen Valor.
I mean, he needs to get out and trial his product. We need to get him in the snow.
Right.
I think it's important. We did a funny skit for his product a couple years ago, but it was in a studio. Uh-huh. Just fake snow. So
it's all CGI.
He won't even get the real snow for the promo.
We need to get him out there.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's great.
But driving... Yeah.
You don't even own a car.
Nah.
Have you gone go-karting with like Lance and him?
I'm like obsessed by it. But no. Like, for example, we were having my birthday 1 year and it was like all the boys we had like, you know, we have some mutual friends. We're like, yeah, let's go rent out this go-kart track and we'll go there at 2.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, oh, what are you guys doing at 2? We're like, oh, we're going go-karting. He's like, oh, I'll see you at the house at like 4. Like, just avoids it.
Interesting.
Because people are going to want to step to him and show him up.
Yeah. I mean, I would though. That's
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm not trying to fucking die today. Okay.
Yeah. Someone's going to try to send it on him and he'll get hurt.
We went karting once and I've been talking a big game about how like in another life I could have been an F1 driver. Yeah. You know, I have that in me and he's like.
No, because he's always topping the timesheets at whatever rental place we're at.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and then some 11-year-old beats him and then he's like, the wait, though.
Dude, wait till I'm fucking the right amount of kilos. Anyway, I've been annoying him so much about this that we.
So I just had to beat him.
Okay.
But I just don't have the talent.
Yeah. Well, he was just like right the beginning's the time to beat him. So he didn't really know the track and he just slammed into the wall and his knee blew up like
I had to go to the hospital. Yeah.
Well, that's.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But like, I'm just trying to make a point, you know?
I've had moments where I've been like, you know, even just around Chloe's family, I'm like, you know, I'm really, I think I might buy a go-kart. Like, yeah. I'm going to get into this. Like, what's it like? And her dad goes to me, you're going to break a fucking rib. And he's like, your snowboarding will be done. And I was like, all right, then I'll.
Okay. So I want to get into this. Yes, all of you athletes who rely on your livelihood is like you preserving your body. Why do you guys go biking and motocrossing and like when Lance was, cause in the beginning of the episode, Drive to Survive actually caught Lance being like, yeah, I'm going to go biking, you know, light road work. And then, you know, 1 week later,
pure Metallica music. Is
yeah. So it's like, have you guys not heard of a fucking Peloton? Jesus Christ. Why do you guys put yourselves through that kind of risk?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just the adrenaline. It's the...
Yeah.
It's also that it's a bit, generally speaking, for athletes, you can also be a bit naive, like, that won't happen to me.
Right.
It's all
right. Yeah.
Oh, it won't happen. And then it happens and you're like...
How pissed was Lawrence? How pissed was that?
Here's the thing. On the show, he's like, and then in that moment, you become a father. And certainly that's in there. He's like you got to remember, no, I'm sure dad.
I'm sure he was worried about his son. But when you hear your son is in a bike accident, of course you're worried. But once you find out he's alive and okay, then you're furious, right?
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
My favorite was Lando when he asked Lance if he could still wank. And I think Lance shook that one off, but I mean, come on.
But then Carlos Sainz was like, bro, if he can drive Formula One, he could win.
Lance also said, I'm saving my energy for the track.
Yeah, there you go.
It was a nice answer, neutral answer.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, of course, the one thing that you wouldn't want to damage is your two wrists and your hands.
And his toe. Yeah. You're slamming on the toe. On the brake.
I think it was on accelerator side. So it would have been interesting if it was brake side because the brake is intense.
Yeah.
But yeah, naturally, I think Lance was obviously upset. Everyone was.
Of course.
It was a shitty situation, but it was a really good, again, this was a good display of the Lance I know. Like, you know, he had to show a bit of adversity and fucking show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had Alonso as a teammate. So, and he did. And he, you know, got top 10 the first race and did really well after that. And so it was really cool to see that. Like, I think it showed a lot of humility as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's important. So it's cool to see that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. So, We got to the meet cute moment of you and Lance, right? So then how does that parlay into you being his brother-in-law? So it's like you're standing at a urinal. You're like, he's like, Scotty James, Lance Stroll, what the fuck's up? How's your dick? My dick's cool too. Like, and then, you know, where does that then turn into? Because I've heard you maybe talk in other interviews that like he at some point called Chloe and was like, I think I just met your husband.
Yeah. In the urinal.
In the urinal. And Chloe, I saw it. You're good.
He's like, he's got some length with the piss. Like, he's like a strong 45 to a minute 30.
Yeah. Bladder strong.
No, so the story is that I had met Lance, in what, 2018. And then we would stay in touch. And I was actually flying through New York. I had a layover for 2 days before I went on to Switzerland. I was just going, I'd never been. I wanted to check it out. And he literally texted me. I was going there and he said, hey, do you want to go to Canada? And then I was like, I actually can't. I'm going to New York. And then Chloe was there. So then we ended up syncing up. Like, Chloe and I met in New York.
Oh, nice.
We went out to dinner.
Where'd you go?
With her friends at the time. And we went to Motel Morris.
Uh-huh. I love Motel Morris. Yeah.
And here we are.
Wow.
Yeah. In short, that's the conclusion of how we came together.
But sure.
Yeah. So now it's, now I juggle in the paddock, obviously DR being one of my closest friends.
Right.
Family biz.
Yes.
Wanting the best for both of them.
Right. Yeah.
How's this hat doing walking into the Aston Martin garage? To those listening, he's wearing a Red Bull hat.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
There's moments where I have to, depending on the day.
Okay.
Okay.
If it's bad down one end of the paddock, not great. Like, you know that the kettle's overflowed.
Yeah.
It's a bit of this. Yeah. Just in respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they understand. Like, this is my job. I'm a snowboarder. Red Bull's been my partner, awesome partner for far out ages since I was 15.
Yeah.
Almost 15 years. So, and then obviously DRs went to Renault and then was at McLaren, and I always had a laugh. I was like, can someone make me just like a hat?
Yeah.
That's like one side is, and then one side is 18 green.
That's what, Brady.
Brady Quinn, his sister was dating. It was a quarterback for Notre Dame. His sister was dating like a linebacker on Ohio State on the other side. And his sister showed up to like the game with like half was Notre Dame and half was Ohio State. And that's what you need.
Yeah. Travis Kelce's mom.
Yeah.
Because when they played against each other in the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
She wore, because it was Eagles and Chiefs, and she wore someone made her a half and half jersey.
But you're just going to end up pissing both people off.
Right.
When you walk in.
Yeah. You get it approved. I feel like that would be kind of iconic if you walked in wearing like a half Red Bull, half Aston hat.
I went to a Knicks game recently, NBA, and it was sick. Good experience.
Yeah.
But I sat next to, I forget the players, but one son was playing for the Pacers. The other one was playing for Knicks.
Okay.
And the mum was sitting next to me and I was talking to her. And she had like, you know, his signature shoe on one foot and the other signature shoe on it. I was like, how sick is that?
No, it's going to cost some like hip unalignment, but that's the first place I went.
But yeah, it's complicated to summarize.
Right, right.
But
What is, so you're in, you meet Chloe, you guys get together, like, what's that first kind of sit down with Lawrence like? Like, talk about like the most intimidating father-in-law that you could probably possibly have in the world. Like, you are up like of in the top 1% of like intimidating father-in-laws.
Yeah.
First,
more intimidating? I can't even think of one.
More intimidating
than he's the most intimidating man in the world.
Yeah.
it appears to me.
I can't even think of. I'm not.
When we were in high school, we grew up with John McEnroe's daughter was a good friend of ours,
right?
And so we did a sketch show our senior year, and so we did a sketch show, and we were like, you know, Emily, we asked her to be like a part of it, and we were like, could we do a sketch? Would John be open to doing a sketch where like one of us is taking you to prom, and like you're getting ready, and he's like grilling you about like what are your intentions with my daughter? So we filmed this thing with John McEnroe,
and he was like grilling us,
and he lived up to the moment. Yeah. Like, we were like terrified.
He understood the assignment.
He crushed it. He improvised, and he was just like,
and he was like, he came late from like
he was at a Met game.
He showed up late.
Yes,
and then And Brian was trying to make small talk with him and was like, hey, John, like, how was the Met game? He goes, I don't know. I had to leave early. And we were like,
he's like, to come film this thing with you guys. So like, what
like,
are we doing?
It was like extra innings, which means it was like exciting. Yeah. We had to miss it. And he was wearing like a tie-dye shirt.
A Jimi Hendrix experience.
Because he's like, he's into like music and stuff, but it didn't look adult. And so I was like really scared. So I went to his daughter and was like, do you think he could wear like something a little more adult? And he was like, Dad, Matt hates your shirt. Change it. And I was like, oh,
he
my
looked at us
God.
Like, who the fuck are these kids in my home?
So good.
So yeah, we were just intimidating, pretending to date his daughter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm actually doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that first meeting like?
So the first one was quite funny because, it was in a lot of milestones actually in Melbourne, but it was in Melbourne during the race, and Chloe and I had been seeing each other January, February, March. The race is always around March, so 2.5 months
okay
at that point. And I was just this Scott guy,
Right. Right.
That was it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, yeah.
I don't even think the name was in the equation. Right. Right. I was just a guy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, two months in, it's, you know, this is early days.
Just a guy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you heard the name 10 times, still a guy.
Yeah.
And we were, I remember it because it was before either quali or the race, one of the two. And in those moments, like naturally everyone's pretty intense. And he was sitting we were at the hospitality. I walked over and I kind of walked past and I wasn't going to actually go and say hi to Chloe. And she's sitting with her mom, Claire Ann.
Yeah.
And she's lovely. And she like saw me and waved me down. She's like, come over and sit with us.
Mm.
And like, I saw him in the corner. So I didn't know what to do. And Chloe didn't tell me to come. So I'm like, oh shit. Mm. Like, I don't know what to do here. So I walk over and I sit at the table and Chloe's here. I think Claire Ann's there.
My heart is in mom. my heart is pounding.
Yeah, my palms are sweating.
Oh, Vankas, this episode is brought to you by BetMGM. As you know by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. I don't know if you knew, but did you place your bets on Yuki and Daniel getting a podium this season? On Red Bull winning all of the races? On Lando getting his first win? If you made those bets at the beginning of the season, you know you did it on BetMGM because we put them there, baby. And if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code RED and you will get up to $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. You download the BetMGM app and you sign up using bonus code RED. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game, any race, hockey, basketball, whatever it might be, F1, IndyCar, NASCAR, you know what it is. You'll receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if your bet loses. Just make sure that you use the bonus code RED when you sign up. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the United States. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 21 and over only. Please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customer only. Subject to eligibility requirements, rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code RED and get your $1,500 first bet offer today. Oh, Vankas, this episode is brought to you by Southern Comfort. With an innovative blend of fruit and spices, SoCo Whiskey is the original ready-for-anything spirit. Satisfying on its own and ideal for any mixed drink, Southern Comfort is tasteful and approachable however you drink it and whoever you drink it with. You have friends you don't like, guess what? Have a little SoCo with them, you might like them, okay? Yeah, we got SoCo Original, the classic, right? It uses an iconic recipe of sweetly spiced fruits mixed with a dash of whiskey flavor that has been popular for decades. It's in a category all its own. There's these other ones that are kind of trying to do SoCo now, but SoCo is the OG. SoCo is the Ferrari of this type of drink. Then we got the SoCo Black. It has a whiskey kick with a hint of sweetness that is suave and complex, but welcomingly simple to use in any cocktail of your choosing. And no matter the moment, Southern Comfort is ready for anything, packed with flavor, mixes with anything, and easy to drink. Next time you're at the bar, go ahead and order some SoCo sour shots. One part SoCo, two parts sour mix. They're delicious and guaranteed to keep the party going, baby, just like Lewis Hamilton has done to Formula One. That's what SoCo can do to your party, what Lewis Hamilton has done to the Formula One community. We can just mix it up and make it fun. How about that? Okay, now back to the show.
And
I'm like,
and
man, like, he's here today, directly, so he's fine.
Directly, but like just kind of off this way. Like yeah. Not enough that if I was looking straight forward, Lawrence was in front of me. He was okay. Kind of like in this direction.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was speaking to Chloe and I was speaking to Claire, and every time I'd speak to her, I'd see him there. But he had his aviators on, the famous...
Yes!
You didn't know where he was looking.
Yes!
Had the famous aviators on.
Yeah.
And he was in a meeting, but he was just kind of like... looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
So he could have been looking at you, maybe.
But
maybe.
I don't know. So I don't want to. Now I know him. He wouldn't have been. Or yeah. Maybe, I don't know. But if he was,
yeah,
he was looking straight fucking.
Yeah.
I was just not even in the equation.
So this wasn't. You didn't actually meet him.
So yeah. You get there, and then then this thing happens, and I remember like hitting Chloe. I'm like, your dad's like staring at me, like death staring me.
yeah.
And she looks at him and she goes, oh, no, he's not. He's not even looking at you.
You'd be dead if that was.
Right, right.
And then the race happened. It went really well. And then we met for the first time. I said hello. But that was the first time.
Right. Mm. What's the handshake like? What's a Lawrence Stroll handshake? What's the vibe?
Depends who you are.
Okay.
Well, if he's you, let's say he's you.
I'm hugs.
Right, okay. Right.
Stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We bypass the handshake. Okay. Now.
But that first time, like you're dating my daughter.
This one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then natural progression was like, you know, this.
Right.
Yeah.
Dab it up.
Yeah.
We're getting
like
there.
One arm hug.
Yeah. And then now he just.
Now he's just full hug.
Just a good hug.
Yeah.
He looks like he'd give a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great hug.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you picked up any? We're Jews.
That's a good one.
We're Jews.
So am I.
Yeah, that's right.
I actually am.
Oh, you. Well,
you converted.
Yeah.
You actually converted?
Yeah, I converted.
Did you do the chair on the wedding?
Yep.
All right.
The chair.
Did you go? You were in a chuppah?
I did a full. Yep.
Did you step on the glass?
Yep.
And we saw you had a kippah.
I had a kippah. Yeah, so I converted. And I'm Jewish. One of the boys.
Yes.
One of the boys.
You might be one of the best athletes we have.
Yeah, we claim you.
Did he make you get circumcised?
let's not go there.
Have you picked up any Yiddish?
Yiddish.
No Yiddish.
What's some words I really like?
Yeah.
I love mensch. I reckon that's
yeah. Yeah. It's a great one.
That's a solid word.
Is that thrown around in the Stroll household at all?
Mensch, yeah.
Yeah.
But only with like real mensches.
They don't, right. It's not overused.
No, yeah.
There's no mensch inflation.
Yeah. No.
No one's a schmuck in the Stroll household or.
Yeah, there's a few schmucks.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Meaning, you know, people get called schmucks often.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Putzes.
There's. I'm a big Shabbat guy. I love Shabbat.
Yeah.
Oh, do you practice?
Fridays we do Shabbat.
You do Shabbat dinner?
Yeah, we do Shabbat dinner.
Right.
This guy's more Jewish than me.
Literally. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It just forces you to just decompress.
No phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just be present.
Yeah.
Talk about the week. See how you're going. Good or bad. You just talk about
Since
it.
You've become Jewish. Has your mom started calling you and making you feel like shit about yourself? Is that...
No, my mom loves it.
Then you're not Jewish. That comes with the package.
She wants to be...
guilting you and shaming you and making you feel horrible. How did your conversion... What did you do?
Yeah, what was the process?
I did... I was pretty intense. I did about... I'd say around 15 to... like 15 weeks of... lessons with a rabbi. The rabbi I did it with was in Italy who officiated our wedding. And I did it's mikveh, right? When you do
bath?
Yeah, I did a bath.
Wow. Yeah.
On the FaceTime. So it was very legit. And then I had to learn a bunch about obviously the holidays and traditions and everything like that.
This guy didn't do anything. He just had to be fucking born.
I was just born. I didn't do Hebrew school.
Yeah, I did Hebrew school.
I didn't have a bar mitzvah.
Of course, I did. I was bar mitzvahed.
Okay.
Did you get bar mitzvahed?
No bar mitzvahed.
Well, that's next for you.
Yeah, could have used the cash.
Yeah, it's... But yeah.
If it's anything close to your wedding, it would be a pretty fun bar mitzvah. So wait, whose idea was this? Like, was this a conversation? Was this something that you were like, I want to do this? Was this a conversation with the family? Like, how did this come about? The process?
It was important to Chloe and the family, and respectfully, I value that. So I was like, 100%.
Nice.
It was more about just understanding the traditions and the values. The Jewish religion, which. I'm well versed in now, obviously, since then, but, and then, understanding why certain things are done. And so,
yeah.
Do you ever throw in tell Chloe she's got a Shana Punim?
Shana Punim?
Shana Punim.
No, she's got a Shana Punim.
It's a
nice face.
Nice face.
A Shana Punim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Jewish name is Ari.
Ari.
Nice.
Nice.
So Scott Ari.
Super.
Yeah. Chloe's Faggy. She's
Faggy.
Yeah. And Lance is Jakob.
Jakob.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell her she's got a Shana Punim.
Shining upon him. Good
yeah.
face.
Just, yeah, nice just like face. You look pretty today.
And if someone, kind of and if thing. Someone, and if someone's got a miserable face, they got a phobicin upon him.
Phobicin upon him.
Yeah. Punim. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Punim. Punim means face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like Lawrence Stroll after a bad race has a phobicin upon him.
He has major phobicin upon him.
You don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so can we talk a bit about the wedding? Because the wedding like broke
the internet.
Formula One internet.
Broke the internet.
It broke the internet of several sports. That's right. You fuck with golf too.
Yeah, I like golf. The wedding was great. It was fun. We had the best time.
Yeah.
And everyone kept saying to us so much, they were like, you know, make sure you get your 10 minutes together. But honestly, we felt like we were engaged and we had a sick time the whole time. Like we got to really actually, so we had a three day bender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Celebration. And I feel like for strategy, it was quite good. The first night, we had like a bit of a welcome drinks and we said hello to every person, like everyone that showed up. Because sometimes with a bigger wedding, you don't get to say hi to everyone. So we stood at the front door and we said, say hi to everyone. So then, you know, I feel like sometimes if you don't, then the 3 days you're kind of consumed by.
Right. I mean, you go to a thing like that and it's like, when I'm at a big wedding, I always feel like stressed for the bride and groom. Cause I'm like, especially if I'm like, you know, it's like, or if it's like a cousin of mine, I'm just like, oh, it's all good. Like, I love you guys. Like, don't have to worry because they're being pulled in a million different directions.
You are a burden.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Just me. That's a good smart move.
Yeah. So then after that we were able to just enjoy it.
Just kick back and
it was
enjoy.
Fun. It was super fun. So we did one night, then we had the wedding on the Friday.
Okay.
Obviously before sunset.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Before you shut it down.
We just had some friends over from everywhere, Australia, UK, Europe, US. It was fun.
So why Venice? Because we're in Venice right now. So a different Venice.
Yeah, we are.
A little slightly different vibe.
Yeah, slightly different vibe. Yeah. A little less pasta.
Yeah.
Maybe. But the
better skating though, probably.
Better skating, yeah, sure. But we actually no specific reason. We always wanted to go. So originally we were looking around Italy. We actually looked a few places. And when we went there, I don't know, it's just something. We were like, this is cool. Like, we know a lot of people have gotten married in Venice before, but we did it in a pretty cool, unique way. And it's a city of love. Like, it was sick.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was cool. Like, it's, you know, you get around on boats and everyone's together. And so we got the feeling, I would say, it was like the defining decision on doing it there. So it was fun.
Nice.
Today's episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Look, you've saved, you've researched, you've invested all that you can. Now you need to take a look at the investments and how to take those to the next level with Yahoo Finance. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're an experienced investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and the data you need in one place. The number one finance destination to give a holistic look at the financial news. Listen, in terms of wealth, I'm not Lawrence Stroll or Toto Wolff yet, but with Yahoo Finance, it's helping me get there. I can see how the markets are doing and find out more about certain stocks and get the latest financial news. Yahoo Finance is where I learned after Ferrari announced Lewis for 2025, the stock price went up more than 12%, increasing their market cap by $10 billion. I'm basically a stock trader. That's how Yahoo Finance makes me feel. For a comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's YahooFinance.com.
How involved were you in like the lead up, the like planning, like all that kind of stuff?
Everything, basically.
Yeah. It was all me, actually. All right,
well, we're going to ask you some questions that we're going to see.
Like Chloe could have put it more of an effort in, actually. doing that, snowboarding, the whole thing. Anyway,
right. What was the flavor of the cake?
Oh, we did a crostata. So this huge crostata. It almost, you know, like you see a massive paella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, right. It's like this huge, big crostata.
Nice.
It's like, crostata is my favorite dessert.
Nice.
So we did that. But nah, Chloe definitely did all the heavy lifting. And her mom. They did a good job.
What was the first dance song?
First dance song was a Chris Stapleton song.
Okay.
And it was... Shit. This is embarrassing. You're definitely not cutting this out.
Yeah. Well, you were like, I thought we were going to talk about Formula One. What the fuck?
Okay, I like this song. Anyway, we danced to a great song.
How many outfit changes did she make over the course of the night? Was there like a wedding dress and then a party dress though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense.
But, right.
First night there was one, wedding day two. I even actually changed outfit.
That was another question. Yeah. What did you start with? What did you switch into?
Just a black,
right.
Black tie tuxedo. And then switched into a white jacket and some white Air Force Ones in the night.
Nice. Yeah, come on. Get
the dancing feet going.
Get comfortable with
it. Chloe got into white Air Force Ones and like a shorter, kind of like more playful dress.
Gotcha. Was there a band or a DJ?
Both.
Both.
Yeah, we had a good band.
Nice.
Play. That was really sick. And then we had, super good DJ. It was sunrise when we walked out.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
went
we didn't
late.
Even realize yet.
Yeah.
I love that.
Did you make a playlist? What were like some like, gotta have this song, like this is a banger? Like what did you?
I'm a big like 90s. I love like 90s hip hop.
Okay.
I do like some house music. I like deep house music too. So it's a good combination between some mainstream music, but then some good stuff.
Nice. What was in the swag bag for the guests?
Ooh, swag bag. There was, from memory, there was a rescue kit, which had Tylenol in it.
Right, yeah.
I think there was like some mints in there, not in the rescue bag, but like.
Yeah, sure.
There were some mints in there. Might've been some chocolate. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Sure.
There's a bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah. Who gave the best speech?
My brother Sean kind of knocked it out of the park.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Because he's been around us the most. So he did a good job. There were some really like nice ones, but my brother Sean's was like, I felt like I was watching a Broadway show. Like it was hilarious.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah,
he pulled out this, what looked like a Bible.
Uh huh.
And like he pulled out the Bible and he was like, I'm going to read some things from the Bible. And he like pretended it was dated back to, the 1700s. And he like, before he started his speech, he like opens his book and goes, and there was like a bunch of baby powder in there. And he like starts reading.
Oh, damn,
so
he came
good.
With props.
Yeah. It was brilliant.
That's amazing.
Sorry, the Torah.
Yeah.
Not the Bible.
you are forgiven. What was the best activation? Like, was there like a photo booth? Like, what was the, like, did you
best
have any?
Best activation. The last night was really fun. We had at a fish market.
Uh-huh.
It was like super sick, like food set up. That was pretty fun. We had just a really good band. There was some really funny like photo props set up for people to take photos. Actually, smoked meat is a big thing, right?
Yeah.
In Montreal where Chloe comes from.
Yeah.
So we definitely had some smoked meat in town.
Nice.
Had some sandwiches.
Did you have any bagels, like Montreal style bagels?
Actually, no, we should have, but
ooh.
Or there might have been, I just didn't see them.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Nice. Yeah. So we mentioned there was this the reports that came, there was the after the wedding, there was this whole Liv PGA deal.
I'm gonna be killed off of this podcast.
Yeah, like were you aware that was going on? Was this like a surprise to you? Like, what other deals were brokered at your wedding?
your wedding seems like it was a Trojan horse for a lot of shit.
The Trojan horse, yeah. There was some. I don't know the details, but there were some deals made.
Yes, nice.
Might have been some golf clubs and golf balls involved.
Yes.
Yeah. Somewhere.
But, yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's. So I got.
Okay, so how's Aston Martin looking this year? What are you got any predictions?
Nice pivot.
Yeah.
Predictions. I don't know. I think it'll be from what I understand, like, you know, points team again this year, top 10, might have some good moments depending the track. But again, like, I don't know the nitty gritty details, but I do know that, you know, obviously Red Bull's going to be significant. I think they're like 2/10 quicker than everyone already.
Yeah.
But I think definitely like top four, top five is Aston this year.
Yeah.
It's kind of all I got. I did actually get to go out, which is really cool. I went out to Silverstone and watched the test just for a couple of hours, and the guys like Alonso and Lance were saying the car was really good. So we'll see. Nice. There could be some surprises. And it's crazy now. It's great in F1 where obviously I think like the cost cap's good, and then obviously performance is a little bit more. It's probably testing and challenging teams a little bit more just with development.
Yeah.
Because, like, look at last year, like, McLaren was, what, maybe, you know, 8th or 9th.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they were mid-season break comes around, and they were just steaming at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's exciting, too.
Totally.
I think the driver market's going to be exciting, too. Oh, it's going to be a soap opera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's already blowing everyone's crazy. Mind.
Yeah,
I mean, the Lewis move was crazy.
Well, I think
before the season too.
Yeah.
Well, I also think just because like all their contracts are up, they're going to be driving like psychos.
Yeah. Everyone's going to leave no stone unturned.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone would really want that Mercedes seat for sure.
Yeah.
How pissed do you think Lando is that he signed before?
I don't know how that works out, because I mean, you know, do most of the drivers have brake clauses?
Right
Yeah,
like, does he have one?
Right,
I have no idea.
Sure.
I think McLaren's obviously a strong team, so, and he's kind of like the guy for McLaren.
But
I don't know. I feel like with that, because obviously George is the future of Mercedes.
Is he though?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think he's like obviously very good.
Yeah.
But if he can't beat Lewis, then.
But he did last year.
He did beat him. He beat him the year before.
I think it's been pretty fair play
the
past two seasons. Okay. I wouldn't say there's been one significant out of the two.
Right.
Okay. Personally.
Right.
Okay.
Personally. But, I should actually check the facts on that, like in terms of like,
not on this podcast.
Yeah, this podcast is not about that. It's just feelings over facts.
Yes.
But like, I find with a team like that, or just most of the teams, like McLaren obviously took on two like pretty youthful young drivers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Aston's like youthful young, and then obviously Alonso that brings a lot of value and they can learn a lot from him. So it'd be interesting to see like what Mercedes's next step is. Is it going to be a pretty front foot and just bring like two young guys in?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or do you find someone more mature?
Yeah.
To drive with George.
Right, right. Because there's this Kimi Antonelli kid who's coming up through the ranks.
Yeah.
Who's like apparently just unbelievable. Yeah.
And that was like Verstappen. I mean, he was either F4 or F3 and went straight into F1.
Yeah.
And like crushed.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you mentioned Oscar, another Australian.
Hmm.
But we were kind of like marveling at that. There's like kind of like typical, you know, Australian stereotype, I guess, like what you think in Australia. And you and Daniel kind of fit in that category. Yeah. You're kind of like, you know, friendly, you know, boisterous, like funny guy. And then
you, Brian, are saying Australians are like Americans that people don't hate.
Yeah. I was like, you get to be like boisterous and loud and whatever, but you don't have like the stigma of being American. Yeah. So you get like all That's the benefits so of the personality kind of stuff without that thing. But where does, like, how do you, have you hung out with him? Have you spent any time with him? Like, what does Oscar sit in your mind to you as like an Australian?
He's breaking barriers for Australians.
Yeah, he's breaking down stereotypes.
You can be like quiet and nerdy as an Australian.
Yeah, he's met him.
Yeah,
super nice kid.
Yeah,
he's really nice, and his trainer's really nice. Like generally, yeah, got a lot. I just think he's a good kid.
Yeah,
and I think he's, you know what? I think he's one of those. He probably is similar to, again, I don't know him that well, so I'm only just from my small time I've spent time with him. I think he's someone that is just, he's a competitor.
Yeah.
Like he wants to win. And I think that's that's his goal. So yeah. Like there's no other motive other yeah. than that. And I think that's what his personality is.
Yeah.
So not to say that being a character is necessarily a motive or you have to work hard on doing that, but it's sometimes naturally that comes to people and you can distinguish between the two, whereas some are just like competitors.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily A, care to have any of that other shit going on, or it doesn't come to them that, like, it's not a natural kind
yeah,
of
whether thing. He win, we've seen him win a sprint race and seen him get,
I would like to see him
off.
Get pretty pumped up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because when he won the sprint race, it's very, it's just very.
He's so even.
He's here.
He's yeah. like, he's like wet, cool, like, nice. Yeah. And then when he gets knocked off, I've seen him get punted off the track and he's like, I don't know what that guy was doing. Like,
like, yeah, like, I'll bring the car around, I yeah. guess. Yeah,
I got punted off the track.
I gotta put it in reverse.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've had very small amounts of like time, but yeah, I would just say he's very I think his priorities are in the car and racing, and that's yeah. what he wants to do,
yeah.
which I think is great.
And what's next on your agenda?
My agenda now is I go back to Australia. So uh-huh. I finished my competition season, had a really great year, which was awesome. I felt really happy with the season. So I'm kind of going into the off season now, being able to chill. I'll go watch the Oz GP. We don't really get to that many races. Like, we're obviously in it and amongst it and talk about it. Like,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
Chloe and I, we go to Melbourne, we go to Monaco, we try to go to Montreal because that's where she grew up.
Yeah.
I went to Singapore last year. That was a cool one. Maybe when I retire one day, I'll just do the full world tour.
Right.
Chloe did it once and she was like, it was
never again.
Full on. Like, she yeah. finished college and I think the year Lance was in Williams and she was like, I'm yeah. going to do a full F1 season. She was like,
it's like, it seems like, we've gone to a couple just like to be spectators and do a podcast. And we're like, this is exhausting.
Yeah. You know, the travel is insane.
It's also just extremely stimulating the whole time.
Right. Yeah.
There's always people walking around and the who's who, and there's always like,
right.
And they're doing, I love the US. Like, I love how it's been Americanized a bit. Like, just very extra. You guys just do it. Just so extra.
We just do it big.
What?
Bigger. What? Louder.
Were you in Vegas this year?
Faster. No, I wasn't, but it looked insane.
Vegas
it
was fucking insane. Crazy.
It was so yeah. amazing.
I heard it was like,
it was like Hunger Games vibes. Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah, I mean that the opening ceremonies when they got risen through the boxes, that was yeah. real. We were at the ceremony.
I'd love
like,
to know the budget for that.
Not enough. Alone. Not enough.
Yeah.
But the older fans, I feel like a lot of the older fans are like always just looking for a reason to hate the USification. But so it's nice to hear, you know, someone who likes it.
No, I like it. I think it's good. And before, like, you know, for example, like Daniel and I, he would almost used to come here to LA to get away from people recognizing who he was.
Right.
Not anymore.
Very European
yeah.
based sport. And the first year that we met when we were here, that was the case. Like,
yeah.
obviously, you know, people would obviously notice.
Yeah, it, yeah, yeah.
But like, now it's insane. We were in Montana last year or whenever it was in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Really?
And the whole street is like stops. And I'm like, this is mental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what that's done for the business and the characters in the sport, him yeah. and everyone else. Like totally. It has just blown it up.
Yeah. And we're like, I know that we have an Australian fan. I don't know if you don't know if he's from Melbourne. I don't know if you know the band Jet.
Yes.
They're from, and he was like, you know, nobody gives a fuck about snowboarding in Australia.
Yeah.
And, but he's like, but I was out wondering where are the pockets of like where you can't go anywhere?
Melbourne's pretty, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that for me.
Yeah.
And then also just like ski resorts around the world, like okay, Switzerland right. a lot.
You're like this in Switzerland? You're like,
no, oh, not like that. But.
Well, you got the helmet and the goggles, so yeah. it could probably yeah. helps. Do you rock the red gloves when you're just like at a resort just yourself?
Yeah.
Well. You do? So he's trying to get noticed, dude.
You're trying to get recognized.
And in the US quite a bit, like just ski resorts and
yeah.
things. And honestly, now it's wild. Even just like being associated indirectly to F1, people are
Have people maniacs. Stopped you being like, oh my God, you're Daniel Ricciardo's friend?
Yes.
Daniel Ricciardo's friend or Chloe Stroll's husband? Chloe Stroll's husband.
Well, it usually goes either one of them 50-50 and then my snowboarding.
It's like, you know, I got a gold medal. Multiple in X gold Games. Medals.
Yeah, yeah. Forget about all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I have to ask, when you train, like, what's important? Like, because I know drivers, it's neck. And then, you know, the core, you have to be strong and the leg, you know, because you're hitting the brake. Because I was watching your Olympic medal, but I saw, like, the guy who got the gold medal, he's just like this little guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is there like an ideal body type for a snowboarder? Because it's like, you know, you look like you there do. Is. He looks like he does. Sean White didn't seem particularly fit.
Who's
like
that?
He didn't seem physically imposing. It doesn't seem like, I mean, all drivers, they're kind of lanky. They're either really short or they're like, you know, Esteban Ocon, they're really skinny and they have thick necks. Yeah. Like, what's the ideal body type for a snowboarder?
Short. Sure. Because it's all about rotation. Lowering your center of gravity. So like the lower you can be, like the stronger you can be in transition.
So you've overcome a lot.
Yeah.
I'm definitely, I'm very tall for my sport.
Right.
Like it's not, I don't know. It has a pros and cons because it's like, it's a little bit more challenging trick wise, but then in bad conditions, I could probably hold speed better than most, which means like I'm going to be able to go higher so I can make the level a bit higher than everyone else.
How does height help you go higher?
Just the weight.
Yeah.
Just the weight.
Like I would say I'm 80 kilos and then I reckon most of my competitors would be like high 60s, 70, 75 maybe. So six more kegs.
So if it's like inclement, if it is like snowing or if it's like bad weather, you're like choppy, are you like, this is like, let's fucking go?
I don't think about it in the sense of weight, but I think we work hard to try and make sure I could win in any scenario.
Right. Is it hard for you when you do a run and you do pretty good and then the next guy's going and he goes up and you're like, just don't nail it. Like fall, don't hurt yourself.
Right.
Don't hurt yourself, but face plant a little bit.
I mean, naturally, of course.
Yeah, but it's in there.
So are you like fall. Don't get hurt.
Just wobble. Yeah,
never wish that upon anyone.
No, right.
But
how do you not though? In the Olympic Games, you're not wishing when the guy from Japan is going up, you're like, come on, just wobble.
I was like, fuck him. I definitely was thinking like, but I don't watch. I never really.
Because you don't like that about.
Yeah, I just generally don't. I'm just like, whatever happens, happens.
Right.
And when
you
do you see their program before.
Yeah, you know what they're going to do.
Okay.
But if you see what he's doing, are you like, I got to change my program?
You got to think very far in advance so you can have a good understanding of what is going to happen that season. It's honestly similar to F1. It's almost like, well, not really, but. If I was like, let's say I was developing a run and then developing a car, for example.
Yeah.
I can only really prepare as well as I know that this is what might be my competition.
Right.
So that's kind of the scenario. And it makes it challenging too because we train every day with them. So it's very hard.
Right.
Because half pipes are very few and far between.
Right. Yeah.
They're not that accessible around.
So you like, so for your Olympic run, you're like, these are the moves I'm going to do. And you didn't know what he was going to do.
I did know, but I honestly probably could have, you know, he brought the triple cork, which was something that had really never been done before. And I don't want to say I didn't anticipate it because I did, but it was something where I probably should have been more forward thinking in the springtime when I was learning everything to be able to do it as well. Like, I honestly did end up figuring it out in the end before that event, but it wasn't fine tuned enough.
It was like F1. It was too late for you to switch to do a B spec and like switch development directions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you can't like on the day being like, oh, he's doing a triple cork. I guess I'll do a triple cork. It's too late.
If you have the trick. The thing is all our runs are different because you got regular and then goofy. So I'm left foot forward, I'm regular.
Right.
Yeah.
And then right foot forward is goofy.
Yeah.
Right.
He's goofy, I'm regular. That doesn't matter. It's more that I'll put my run together and it kind of has to happen in motion between regular and goofy. Mm-hmm. And it's very tough in some cases to just add something in.
Right.
Mm.
In the moment.
Right.
See.
I don't want to get like too much lingo.
No, it's interesting.
No. Yeah.
We watched the crash reel. That's our only, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar.
Never seen it. Yeah, no.
That's the only, but I remember watching it. You watch that documentary and you're like, fuck Sean Waite.
Mm.
That was what every normal person thought, right?
Yeah.
It was because like Kevin Peart, like Sean Waite had his own like trampoline thing.
Yeah.
And then Kevin Pierce was like, I share mine.
Yeah.
And then, but Sean White's like later come out and being like, you know, a lot of snowboarders back then, you know, they came from like more upper middle class and they were more, they'd want to like share the winnings. And then Sean White was like, no, fuck that. Like, yeah. I'm not going to agree to share the winnings. Like I worked hard. I want to make the money myself. And I'm wondering how like that attitude has like evolved over time. Has it gotten more, because like back then it seemed like it was like, we're all in this together, like more of like a surfing culture.
Yeah.
How has that evolved in like the next generation?
Yeah. I was kind of in the mix in that time of snowboarding. I was young,
right?
13.
Right. But you went pro, like it's like F1. Young, you get, like you, 13, you, you make it to your occupation, like super young.
So I honestly, I respect both because some people, it's like we were saying before, some people work really well with that intensity 24/7.
Right.
And they're like, you know, they're like, fuck everyone. I just want to beat everyone all the time.
Right.
That's Sean.
Yeah.
Whereas I think there's other snowboarders that are a little bit more, they work well with that environment of progression that we all progress.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they be rising tide.
Yeah, yeah.
We all kind of work together, progress. So there was two different ways that you could, even just now, there's two different ways to go about it. There's
Which one are you?
Ruthless.
Where do you lie on the spectrum?
I definitely admired the way that Sean just, I think... Because sometimes you can get caught up in the industry and then your priorities get changed and you're not necessarily that focused on, let's say, winning a competition. It's more about like fitting in. Yeah. Action sport is very, just generally, it's very clicky, not clicky, but you know, opinionated. Like people, you kind of make that decision. It's like, all right, do I want to kind of go out every night and drink, or should I actually take this seriously and try and win?
Yeah.
So I think Sean was probably more in that other side where he was just a little bit more of a ruthless competitor and didn't necessarily care about the other shit.
Right.
Did you ever like see a guy like at a bar and you're like, man, if he was like Sean White, he would be.
Yeah.
And
honestly, 95% of the field.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone is so talented.
Yeah.
Every guy I compete against, and I don't compete against the girls, but the girls as well. Like if everyone had the same work ethic, say, as Sean, or even, you know, myself in this case, or, you know, kind of wanted it like that, it would be far more competitive. But, a lot of them for no reason, and it's fine too.
Yeah.
Like I'm not sitting here saying that they should pull their finger out of their ass. I'm just saying that snowboarding has a very relaxed nature.
Right.
And it's accepted
to
just kind of go along with that energy. Whereas in any other sport, it's just like not even, it's either you have to be this competitive.
Like if Max Verstappen picked up a snowboard, like no one would have a chance. Like if you saw Max Verstappen like picking up, you'd be like, oh shit. Yeah. Oh god.
But I think trying to find a balance is challenging, and I definitely would say I've been more on the side of like, fuck everyone, I'm gonna smoke everyone, and I don't care what anyone thinks. And I think that's really a really good trait or a characterism to have. But then you also, and I'm trying to still be in touch with like the community and because it is important because I do value, I got a lot of inspiration, still have friends in the industry and everything.
Right.
And you don't want to alienate yourself. And right. like I've even gotten to a point where I, in a very small way, you alienate yourself from the industry because you're just so focused on winning. And then you it becomes a bit lonely.
Yeah, obviously. Sure.
So, lonely at the top. Yeah. Well, that's a question I have for you because it's like when you do something that you love as a child and then it becomes like your fucking career that you have to stress about, how do you like reclaim the joy?
How do you guys do it?
Why the fuck you think I'm asking?
Well, we started this because we just like liked it. Now sometimes we're just like, god fucking
is this fucking snowboard guy what time? Yeah. I honestly was so young, I don't think I ever really had to think about that. I've always been, always wanted to do snowboarding competitively. So there was never a point where I was thinking to myself, oh, do I want to do this as a profession or not?
I know, but when you're a kid, you're not as mature or aware. You see guys doing it on TV and you're like, or you play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and you're like, I want to be like one of these guys. But then when you're actually doing it and you've have to go on a podcast or do press or whatever the fuck. And then you're like, oh, this kind of sucks.
Yeah.
How do you reclaim the thing that you fell in love with in the first place? Or you think it's pretty easy?
I had a pretty big milestone moment with that when I was 15. I got the chance to go to my first Olympics in Vancouver, 2010. And I had experienced probably the first time where I really just hated snowboarding. Like I went from being the best or one of the best juniors to, you know, being recognized by Australia as a potential to go to the Olympic Games. And then that obviously opened up this whole pool of, you know, prospect of potentially going, you know, I started to grow up, hit puberty, got taller, like all this stuff out of my control started to happen. And basically I just started to suck at snowboarding. I wasn't very good and I wasn't hitting expectations and it was just this spiral. Like I just kept going. And that really sucked the whole fun out of it for me. Like I just didn't like it. I mean, came home from an event, and basically cried for hours to my mom, just being like, I can't do it anymore. And I was like, I was 14 or 15.
Damn.
I was pretty young.
Yeah.
It felt like I was, you know, 65.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I was also grade 9 at school, got this opportunity to go to the Olympics. Like there were so many cool things about it.
Mm.
But the bottom line was I just didn't like snowboarding
anymore. Yeah.
I really struggled to get out of bed. Like going to travel the world to do what I loved in the past tense was like a pulling teeth.
Yeah.
And that's really bad. Like at that
age. And was it just like that you weren't succeeding or is it the pressure?
Because I wasn't succeeding, the pressure. I just felt like I was disappointing everyone every day. My family, you know, my family would never have been. They've loved me unconditionally, but, you know, naturally I felt like I was disappointing the family. My parents might have expected me to do better. And then, you know, the Australian team might have expected me to do better. Sponsors, like it's just this endless kind of basically people saying
it's a lot of pressure to put on anybody, let alone a kid.
Yeah, and then I think as well at that age, you have I had such an ego that I'm like, I'm not talking to anyone about it because I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm not fine.
I
was struggling a lot. So that was a really great time for me to learn like what my priorities were with my sport. And I ended up making the Olympics. So it was fine. But I really do now these days. I'm like, if I didn't make it, would I have kept going? I don't know. Because I was
If you didn't make the team?
Yeah. If I didn't make the team, I don't know if I would have kept snowboarding.
Really?
So
did that experience of going there, did it kind of reignite something within you?
Yeah, it reignited me because all of a sudden for the first time in 18 months, well, almost 2 years, I had affirmation.
Yeah. What's it like being in the Olympic Village?
Sick.
Because all you hear about the Olympic Village is that they, you know, 10 million condoms.
Yeah, 10 million condoms, McDonald's, food, the whole thing, you name it.
Really?
Yeah, it's just a big... Vancouver, in particular, was pretty sick.
Like, yeah.
Very special place, amazing host city. Russia was a little bit more challenging.
Right.
Korea was not bad. China was a bit challenging.
God, how many fucking Olympics have you been to?
I'm vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have Italy next, which should be sick. So I'm looking forward to
that's
that.
That's so sick.
Where, which part of Italy?
It's in Milan.
Milan.
So it'll be a couple hours out of Milan.
Oh, that's fucking
sick. But anyway, so I had kind of learned that young.
Yeah.
And then I think.
But you're already jaded. You're like, it's not like, it doesn't hit like Korea.
You guys should have been in Vancouver.
You guys should have been in Vancouver. Yeah, exactly.
I think always just having a good grip of like why you started it. Because I think sometimes you can, not even just you, but other people can have an agenda for like what they think you should do. And yeah. It's like, it's fine to have that if it's positive, but even if it's positive, it might not always be the right thing. And then you just kind of end up losing track of why you even started in the first place.
Right. But it's so crazy because I'm sure like the first time you're at the Olympics, you're like, I'm at the fucking Olympics. Mm. But now you're at what number of Olympics would it be for you?
Four. Next one would be five.
Yeah.
At your fifth, how do you get to how do you not get jaded at your fifth Olympics? or you manage to be excited every time?
No, I am excited because it's cool. It's, you know, it's something that happens every 4 years.
Right.
There's a bit more, you know, you wear your team colors. It's
right.
Exciting. And I think for me as well, Australia, as you said, the guy from Jet said, no one gives a shit about snowboarding.
And you're like, well, no one gives a shit about Jet.
Yeah, no one gives a shit about Jet anymore. Yeah. No, but the
he's gonna love that.
It's the one time that Australia tunes in. Honestly, right, you know, right. We have X Games and things like, which is our biggest event every year. But you know, no one's talking about anything but the Olympics.
No, it's kind of it's like Jamaican bobsled team a little bit because it's like Australia because you know, well yeah, because it's bit. Well it's like Australia, you know, it's like the Australian champion snowboarder and you're like, where the fuck did this guy snowboard? What?
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's wild now too because I have an awesome team around me, but you have to like to just be a snowboarder is not if you want to make a career, like a sustainable career.
Yeah.
Like and either be in the industry or not, or do something, like you have to go overtime all the time because you can't just be great at snowboarding. And what I mean by that is like commercially.
You
can win every event under the sun and you'll probably sign some good deals, but it's not sustain. Like it's not going to sustain you for the rest of your life.
Right.
Unless you win Olympics. Olympics can have an effect on that, but you really have to kind of like look at it now as a clean canvas of like, okay, I snowboard, I'm talented snowboard, I love competition, but like what else am I good at?
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? What more do you have to do? What more do you have to do?
Well, I just mean like social media is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
You
got to
put time into that. You got to put time into, you know, other areas, which is great.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You got your clothing line.
Yeah, well, I'm here on this shitty fucking podcast.
Yeah, what do you got to plug?
Yeah,
start plugging some shit.
Yeah,
plug away. I love this podcast.
We're about to hit 100K on Instagram, dude. We're not complete slouches.
Nah, but I don't know, just general stuff. Like we work on potential, you know, series with Red Bull, for example.
Right,
stuff that's relate. We try and do a lot of relatable content because not many people can relate to snowboarding.
Right.
Or even just hero content in general. Like if you win an event, like, you know, maybe 1% of people can really relate to that, like getting there.
Yeah.
Not to say like blowing smoke.
No, you're so fucking elite. It's like, I don't even, what are you? You're like a god.
I just meant in the sense of like, not everyone's always competing. So it's like, fuck, I sound like a real wanker then.
No, because the thing is, it's like when I see a guy shoot free throws, I'm like, I can shoot free throws. But like when I see what you do, I'm like, what the fuck?
Okay, that's a good example is like, when an NBA player only posts about being an NBA player.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't relate to that.
Yeah.
I can relate to, you can shoot a hoop and everything, but I can't relate to being an NBA player.
Right.
So I'm like not that engaged in it.
Yeah.
Whereas if the NBA player starts saying like, you know, I listen to this and I do that and I, you know, like pink socks too, like you're probably going to be more engaged.
Right.
You're like, oh, like we have something in common.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
That's what I mean.
Well, so. It's a story. You get invested in people. It's the whole reason we started this fucking pod is what Drive to Survive exactly. captured okay. so well is the people
now
behind
I,
this.
Now
sport.
I have a pitch to you.
I thought you were pointing at something.
You know, Drive. What would Drive to Survive for snowboarding? How would that? Would that suck? Or how would we make that? Because we're
want partnering. To do it for X Games.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it'd be a good one. I don't think it would suck. In fact, I think the characters in action sport is better than any sport.
Yeah. Better than F. You think it would be better than Drive to Survive?
Character wise, 100%.
But the way you push it, it's like, yeah, this guy would be good, but he just parties too much.
Well, that's interesting.
But I think that on a day to day basis, like action sports athletes have very interesting lives. Mm.
Can you give us an example of a guy that you're like, oh my God, this guy would be the Daniel Ricciardo?
other than you, obviously.
Who would be the Daniel Ricciardo of the X Games
DTS?
Probably like Nyjah Houston.
Okay, who's that?
Skateboarder.
Okay.
Not the same character, but he's a skater. He's a partier. He's like, he shows it. He's got a presence. But that's the cool thing about skateboard. Like, I don't know. I think there's so many.
Okay, but if this goes off the ground, we are Will Buxton-ing it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay.
The thing about
Scotty James.
The thing about Scotty James.
He will. Do a competition.
Yes. Yeah. He will. When he's in the competition, he performs in the competition. He competes.
He competes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, we'll let you go. I have one more question.
Okay.
We're talking about the wedding. Toto Wolff was at the wedding.
Correct.
What was he like on the dance floor?
He goes pretty hard.
Does he? Because we saw him post Abu Dhabi 2021, and I was like, holy shit, this guy fucking turns out some moves.
And then he got mad that it was like, it got leaked. I'm like, it got leaked that you were awesome?
This is
like,
the coolest thing you've ever done, Toto.
That you were awesome?
Yeah, he was partying on the dance floor.
Yeah, he got some moves. Everyone was really moving and grooving.
What about Flavio Briatore?
Didn't see him on the D floor.
Okay.
Stefano?
Stefano was on the D-floor. I can't remember now. Yeah. But everyone was on the D-floor. It was a good vibe. We just had a good energy there.
Hmm.
So if you weren't on the D-floor, it was like,
right.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Get your ass.
Yeah, you need
right.
to
get out. Get right, your ass right, on right, totally.
But it's been fun being a little F1 spy for you guys. I've never done a podcast or just anything that's been very F1 specific.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you thought that this was F1 specific because we barely talked about the sport.
We talked about what
it was like meeting Lance with your dick out. So
and me just saying how I'm just on another planet and people can't relate.
Yeah,
to myself, standing on top of podiums.
Yeah,
dickhead. Basically.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the pod. So we start the episodes with a Was up Vankas, which is an ode to Günther Steiner.
Vankas.
Okay. In the first episode, Drive to Survive, Günther Steiner. Steiner said, "We look like rock stars. Jeez, now we look like a bunch of Vankas."
Yeah. So goodbye, Vankas.
Could you honor us with a goodbye, Vankas?
Goodbye, Vankas.
Perfect.
Yes.
Goodbye, Vankas.
Goodbye, Vankas.
Thank you.